Last time we spoke, my new server had reached the point where it was ready for me to start migrating all my services over from my old server. And I am now part of the way through that process, and I want to talk about what I've done so far.
Okay.
Good. The continuing adventures of Mark's home lab.
So my old server was running a mixture of various services, some of which were installed as snaps and some of which were just sort of odd scripts, and some were Docker containers, which, because I didn't really understand Docker very much when I set it up, were I'd built manual system D units to manage them, which it turns out isn't really necessary because Docker can keep its own containers running.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've tried to do is migrate as much stuff across as I can as Docker containers or to new Docker containers, except the stuff which is already running as snaps really well, because I don't see any reason to change some of these.
It's a container by another name.
Exactly. And I'm quite happy with the snaps that I'm using and the way that they get auto-updated. And I've had some very good interactions with the developers and being able to help with bug fixing and stuff. So it seems a shame to throw that away just for the sake of, you know, going diehard on Docker.
And what are your top snaps on your server?
My top snaps are AdGuard, Nextcloud, and Plex.
Okay.
Classic, yes. All good.
Yes. In this discussion, I'm going to mention AdGuard, but Nextcloud and Plex will come later.
Can't wait.
So the first migration I did, which I actually spoke about quite recently, was Calibre. So I've got Calibre running as a Docker container. So I've got all my books on a server that I can access. So to migrate that, I span up the Docker container on my new server, and Calibre actually has quite a good export-import feature. So it seemed to make sense to me that I would just export my library on my old server, copy that to my new server, and import it into the new container.
What form does that export take? Is it just a big zip file or something? Or
it's like a chunked zip file.
Right.
Depending on how big your library is.
1.44 megabyte chunked zip.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Prime for floppy disk transfer. Yes. Good. So that all worked fine. It's quite a robust, and you know, it's their recommended way of migrating, so I went with that. Another one I've got running as a Docker container is my Bitwarden server, for which I use Vaultwarden, mm-hmm. which is a lightweight single container self-hosted solution for hosting a Bitwarden vault. And that I went with more of a Dockery migration method. So all of the data for the Vaultwarden container is stored on a Docker volume, which is basically a folder on your system which is mounted inside the container. So you can throw away the container and recreate it and remount that, and you've basically got the same instance of your application running. So what I did there was basically SCP that directory from one host to another, stand up the container on the new host and mount the same volume, and it was going again.
Brilliant. And for those of you that are writing an email explaining we shouldn't be using SCP anymore, we know, but we do anyway.
I was going to say, the fact that you mentioned SCP, I saw Martin's hand go up pretty quickly. And I was about to say something not quite the same, which was, we should have a whole segment about how you get files from one place to another at some point. That's a whole segment, but not today.
Another container I have running is OnlyOffice. So this provides document editing capabilities for Nextcloud. That was really easy because all of my actual documents are stored in Nextcloud, and OnlyOffice is just the document server, which is just there to edit stuff. And then it's not really holding any important data. So that I could just throw away and stand up on the new server, no problem. And that just worked, pointed Nextcloud at the new location, and there it was.
Is OnlyOffice a new addition to your server setup? Because I know Alan mentioned that recently when he was using Nextcloud at work, and it was the first time that I'd realized that was a thing.
Yes, I'm sort of still experimenting with it a bit, but it's a relatively new addition. I've tried to use Nextcloud Office before, but not had a lot of success with it. So I thought I'd give OnlyOffice a go and see if it was easier, and it was. It's interesting, though, because OnlyOffice is geared towards being an editor for Microsoft Office files as a primary format, whereas Nextcloud Office is geared towards open document format by default. But, I mean, they do very similar things. Next on the list was AdGuard. Now, AdGuard is running as a snap, and there's a few ways to go about this, but actually I found out that AdGuard's configuration is all stored in a single YAML file.
Nice.
So in this case, the obvious solution was just copy that YAML file from one server to another. I had to edit it very slightly because of the change in IP address and the change in the network interface that it was using for the DHCP server. So AdGuard, I have it configured to be my local DNS server, DHCP server, and provide ad blocking via DNS.
Mm-hmm.
So all of my devices on my network get their IP address from AdGuard, and then AdGuard also says, oh, and use me as your DNS, so I don't have to do any of that configuration manually, which is quite nice. That worked really well as well. I stopped the snap, copied the file in and edited it, and then started the snap up again, and it was all just working. Very clever. There was a bit of a... I think it might have lost my static leases when I did that, so that's where I've said to give specific machine specific IP addresses. So I had to do a bit of fiddling with that, I think. Even though I think they were defined in the file, but for some reason it didn't. It's like it only had them as a cache and then it threw them away when I restarted or something.
Right.
And then the last thing that I did was dynamic DNS. So I have a script which runs on my server, which pings my domain provider to tell it to point a specific subdomain at my home IP address, essentially.
Nicely vague. Very good.
Yes.
Well done.
I use Gandy as my provider, and they have an API for doing exactly this thing. So before, I've just had a script running on a cron job to do this, but I thought it might be nice to see if I can containerize this. And sure enough, there is a Docker container which just runs and does this every few minutes for me. So all I had to do was provide my API key and the domain that I wanted to point and add it to my Docker Compose file. And that's now working as well.
And what's the purpose of registering your IP address?
So that means that I can access all of these things from an actual subdomain,
right,
which will always point at, because I don't have a static IP address at home. I have whatever IP address my ISP decides to give me at any point.
Yeah.
But then all of my other subdomains, which I use for all of my various services, I can then point to that one canonical subdomain,
mm-hmm,
which has my actual IP address. So I don't have to worry about updating them all, which is quite nice.
Yeah, I was just looking back at your list of things here, because obviously if you're on the go on your phone, you need to be able to access Bitwarden from your phone wherever you may be.
Exactly, yes. So that is on one subdomain,
yeah,
and then AdGuard. Well, in fact, I don't access AdGuard externally, but Caliber will be on another subdomain if I want to get a book while I'm out and about, and so on and so on. And that's it so far. So that's all gone pretty well so far. I've got a nice big Docker Compose file with lots of things in, and they're all talking to each other. And I've updated my Nginx proxy, which I spoke about before. So it's now pointing to all of those containers instead of to my old server.
You said a big Docker Compose file. In my head, I thought there'd be lots of little Docker Compose files, lots of YAML files, one for each service. I didn't realize you'd have it all in one hulking great YAML.
You can do it that way.
Oh, okay.
It sort of depends how you want to manage things. What I want is to say Docker Compose up, here's my configuration, and then it stands everything up.
Gotcha.
But you can have them for separate files and manage them, yeah, separately like that if you want to.
Yeah, I think my mental model is broken because I don't use Docker very much, and yeah, I see everything as a siloed, isolated thing and not as a big orchestrated thing. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And it did occur to me a bit. I mean, I've never gone that far into Nix, but from what I've heard about Nix from some people, and I did start to think, oh, I can see now the having everything configured in code and all of your services defined. And
yeah,
I'm starting to see why that's an attractive thing now.
It's not bad going, getting 10 minutes into the show and then Nick's getting mentioned and it wasn't by Martin.
Yeah, checks in the postmark.
So that's it for now. Next up, we have the migration of Nextcloud, which is a bit more complicated. And we have Plex, which is a different beast entirely. And we'll talk about those in future episodes.
I have been torturing my rebuilt Linux workstations to make sure that they do as they're told and work properly.
You mean dripping water on them or something?
No, not at all. I need to explain some backstory. I've recently rebuilt my two principal workstations because, well, one of them kept on ad hoc rebooting and restarting for no apparent reason, and it was causing me lots of problems. So I had to diagnose that and rebuild it. And in that process, I discovered it was actually the power supply that was tripping its transient spike trigger to say it was too much power was being drawn. And it was actually a fault with the power supply. Long story short, I've rebuilt both workstations.
Long story short, I bought entirely new computers.
I didn't actually. I used existing parts to rebuild two workstations. I bought two new power supplies, but I rebuilt the computers using existing parts. But because I'd had this problem, and I've experienced similar things in the past where when I've compiled code, I've seen like hard lockups and what have you. I thought, right, I need to get some confidence that these things are really working and they're not going to go wrong and hard lock up or reboot under load. So I thought, well, how do I torture a Linux machine to make sure that it works when it's actually being stressed? Now, conveniently, there is a tool called Stress, but you don't want that in your life because that's old news. What you want in your life is StressNG, which is written by a friend and ex-colleague of Alan and ours, Colin King.
Yes.
And he's now at the Intel Performance and Kernel team, I think.
He is, except on Friday just gone when he was in a pub with me and three other ex-canonical people drinking beer and having fish and chips. It was great. And he is an excellent human being.
Yeah, he is. He's lovely. He's also a massive Commodore 64 fan, so he gets gold stars all round for me. For
I didn't know that.
So StressNG is a utility that's designed to poke at all the corners of the Linux kernel and make it ache by loading it up with jobs and tasks and what have you. And it's a very comprehensive tool and it's quite a lot to drive. And I thought, I know I need to use this, but I can't be bothered learning all of the ins and outs because I don't know what I want to actually poke. I just want to turn everything up to 11 and see what happens. So there's another utility I found, which doesn't have the best name, but it's a great tool. The name is S2E, S-T-U-I, and it is a terminal user interface for Stress, which you don't want, and StressNG, which you do want.
Ah.
So, armed with this knowledge, I then fired up S2E on the machine, and it's a terminal-based UI, and it monitors everything that's going on. So it shows you an overview of all of your memory, CPU cores, CPU threads, temperatures, voltages, just everything you can imagine. And what S2E has is a rather convenient set of dials where you can say, make it scream for this amount of time. So you can sort of set a time limit. So unsure what was going to happen, I initially sort of 30 seconds and hit the start button. And yes, suddenly everything is at 100% load and the fans start ramping up as the temperatures rise on the CPU core. And I'm thinking, well, this is doing its job. This is, you know, making the machine ache. So armed with that information, I thought, right, let's think about this. How long is a reasonable amount of time to sort of make this burn and see how it works? So I did several one-hour tests.
Oh, wow.
What, like whilst I went downstairs to go and do the cooking. The reason why is the reboots I had experienced in the other office were when I was streaming. So, you know, I'm already sort of quite some time into a workload and then I encounter a problem. So I thought an hour is a good sort of indicator, gives me some comfort. So I've used STUI and StressNG to ramp up the machine. And then I thought, right, let's simulate a maximum stream. So then I used the Unigen benchmark tools, specifically Valley and the one I've forgotten the name of. Gosh, never mind. But the Unigen benchmarking tools, they're 3D benchmarking tools. Some of them are quite old, but they are very good at actually spotting GPU bottlenecks and things. So I then ran StressNG fully loaded and then ran one of these GPU benchmarks at the same time in order to sort of double load up the machine. So fully loaded the GPU to try and drag all of the power that the system would need under peak load and test that the power supply was able to deliver under demand. And I have, I think now, two workstations that don't crash, fall over, or fail under load. So I'm very happy about that.
And you've also successfully compensated for Mark reducing his electricity bill with a smaller server by massively increasing your electricity bill for 3 solid hours while you run this thing. Well done.
Yeah, yeah. It's my contribution to the balance of the universe.
Yes, yes. It's all karma, isn't it?
Interestingly, I actually discovered stress on a related topic because this is how I worked out how much my new server draws when it's under full load, because I ran stress and had an energy monitor plugged in and saw how much it was drawing while that was running.
Right. Oh, that's a good test. I haven't done that, actually. I've got one of the wall monitors.
Mm.
I should actually do the same and see what these are pulling under, like, full load. Yeah, okay. That's a good idea. I could do that, yeah.
Interesting. I'm also tempted to use it on my M1 Ubuntu Asahi laptop and see how long the battery lasts while it's going full tilt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because normally it isn't ever running full tilt.
StressNG is extremely versatile. It's got lots of dials and switches. But what I loved about S2E is it enabled me to just dive in and just start using it really quickly without having to learn all of the knobs and buttons. So those two as a combo, great way to test the stability of your systems.
I have a question for you chaps. Do you think that you experience what you might call the joy of code?
Yes.
Definitely.
Both part of your work life and in personal life as well?
Yes.
So I find if I'm doing it for my work life, I tend to do other nerdy things in my personal life. But if I'm doing other nerdy things in my work life, I tend to do joyous coding in my personal life.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So all the while you're fixing shelves and painting walls and stuff at home, the joy of code happens at work. But while you've got joy of code happening at home, you do something else. I get it. Right.
For me, I could quite happily choose to write code in the evening as opposed to play a computer game. I'm probably more happier writing some software than playing a game.
Interesting. The reason I ask is because I don't think I've had the joy of code for quite a long time. And I've done some what you might call development. Some people might point at that and, you know, roughly wiggle their finger and say that looks like development. And I have for a long time shied away from calling myself anything near a developer. You know, software packaging is about as close as I get and writing a few shell scripts. And every so often I come up with an idea for something and I run it past Stuart Langridge or Martin, usually. And with Stuart, I often end up nerd sniping him into making the thing, in which case there's very little joy for me because I've nerd sniped him into making a thing. More on one or two of those things at a later date. But sometimes I'll brainstorm an idea with him and then maybe write a spec or write some stuff down or design something. But the thing never happens. I never experience the joy of coding. Something blocks me. And I think I've discovered what it is by accident through Terence Eden. Now, Terence Eden, the internet's Terence Eden, Eden T pretty much everywhere, was recently posting on Mastodon about the fact that he laments the loss of Foursquare, and he used to like checking into locations, and he liked being able to post where he was at a particular time and whether he became the king of that location or whatever, and, you know, gets magic internet points for doing it. All good fun. But that service went away, and he thought, well, maybe I could create something using the ActivityPub protocol in order to share my location. Now, for whatever reason, Mastodon and most of the other ActivityPub things don't have this built in, a way to share a location, search for a restaurant that you happen to be sat in and all that kind of stuff that you would get with Foursquare. So he started building something and he built this prototype and he shared a couple of links to it over while he was working through this over the weekends and in the evenings. And I had a look at the code and I thought, huh, interesting. He's doing this in PHP. And then it got me thinking, I have not written any PHP for at least a decade, maybe more, maybe nearly 20 years. I wrote a couple of things using PHP a very long time ago, and I really enjoyed it. And I just banged out the PHP code and made a thing. And it was joyful. And I thought, why don't I just do that? And I happened to bump into Terence at the State of Open Con a few weeks ago. And I poked him about this. And I said, that thing you've made, that Foursquare-like thing with Activity Pub, I was following that with interest. It's very interesting. And I mentioned that I feel like I've not had much joy in coding because I haven't done this thing that I actually know how to code, but I haven't used it for a long time. And I don't know why. I think I've been blocked on like choosing frameworks and lots of other like fundamental decisions about the way in which you build the thing. Whereas what I should have done is just sat down and written some code. And when I mentioned this to him, he was like, yep, exactly. He said, I used a framework, but only because I happen to know it, but he just banged out the code until it worked. And I think that's what I've been missing for a long time, is just banging out code until it just about works.
Yes. And I have experienced similar blockage when I've tried, especially if I've had like an interview where there's been a technical challenge or something, and it's been like, oh yeah, here's the thing. And I'm like, all right, I need to do this. I need to pick which stack I'm going to use. And, you know, and actually, you know what, I've got 4 hours to do this thing. I just need to get down and write it in the simplest way possible that occurs to me. Like when we did a challenge where we wrote a game and I started trying to learn a game engine, and after 2 hours, I just thought, this is ridiculous. I'm never going to do this. So I wrote my game in HTML and JavaScript because those were the tools that I already have to hand, and it makes it easier to get past the code part and onto the joy part.
Yes.
Yeah, I've recently discovered a new joy of coding, and it was when I did a game jam last year and I used Pico 8 for the first time. Now, it uses a subset of Lua as like the main language, but it's a constrained fantasy 8-bit console, like from the 1980s. And the thing that was good about that is because it has such limited specifications and scope, you don't get bogged down in the, what shall I use? How shall I approach this? Because your options are very stark.
Right.
And it gets your mind focused on the, I'm just going to write the game. I just need to think about the game and write the code to execute what I want the game to do. And I absolutely loved it. And I came away with that, with the experience of, I loved Pico 8, but the thing I loved the most, I think, was the Lua language. And I've been investing time in learning and using Lua more for my side projects.
So that's interesting, because that touches a thing that I think is also interesting, is the constraint side of things. When you're constrained, like you're constrained either in Mark's case with time, or in your case with the platform that you've chosen, you're constrained in the number of colors, the resolution, the amount of tokens you can use in the code and that kind of stuff. And because I've not been constrained in any of these big ideas that I've been having, nothing has held me down to get me to write the code. And so I think about this stuff and I write stuff and I never actually write the code and get the joy. And so I thought, well, I'm just going to try it. I'm just going to bang out some PHP. And then I got my next blocker, which was, well, I might want to work on this, not just today, but tomorrow and the next day. How am I going to write PHP? How would I have done it in the past? Do I need to install PHP on a server somewhere and have Apache and, you know, have a whole LAMP stack? And then I thought, oh God, I don't really want to expose it to the whole world because it'll be insecure and rubbish. And I don't want people stumbling upon it. And, you know, I know there's ways to secure it, you know, with htaccess or whatever. But I also thought, I want to be able to edit this in a modern text editor like VS Code or Sublime or whatever. And so I asked in the Linux Matters Telegram channel, which you can join. You'll find a link on our website. And Mark actually suggested a method that I had never heard of before, which is it called debug mode or developer mode? What's it called?
I think it's just called the PHP development web server.
Okay. So basically PHP minus S, is it?
Yes.
And so literally on my home server, I did do it on a remote server because I thought, well, I can access my home server from anywhere. I didn't want to do any coding on my laptop because I actually have like 4 different machines and I could be on any one of them. So the solution I came up with was, on my home server, I created a directory, and in it I created an index.html and an index.php or whatever, like the absolute basics, and then ran PHP minus S and specified the IP address as 0000 and a port number so that I could get at it from any other machine. And because I use a VPN and all my machines can see all the other machines no matter where I am, I can test this on my phone, I can test it on my laptop, I can go to work and still access it remotely. And to edit the code, I could use VI in a terminal, but ain't nobody got time for that. So I'm using a modern text editor, but all I do is in GNOME on my laptop, I just connect to other locations and use SFTP mm-hmm. and mount the folder and then right click it and say open in my favorite IDE. And I'm sat there in my IDE and I press save and it saves it over the network, over the VPN to my server. And I refresh the page in my browser and it updates. And so I've been knocking together a little web application that I've been thinking, oh, this should exist, and it doesn't exist. I think I'll try and make it. And I've had joy. I've had joy because I could bang out some PHP, and sure enough, there's errors, and I forget semicolons, and I don't know the syntax because it's fallen out of my head from many years ago. But there's plenty of resources to help me code, and I've had an awful lot of joy just banging out a little bit of PHP that I haven't done for so long. And it's made me incredibly happy to do it.
I think there's a lot to be said for the accessibility of PHP. It was always easier to get up and running in terms of, even if you needed to do like a production configuration, it was way easier right. to get PHP going than it was, you know, Python, for example. I can remember when I started doing Python at scale, and it was horrid. I mean, this was a long time ago now, but it was hard work actually bringing up Python mm-hmm. in a similar way I was familiar with bringing up PHP for serving web applications. And I think you've hit on something here, which is sometimes it's best to just not focus on the how, but just start.
Yeah, I mean, it's horrible code, and I'm echoing out HTML from within my PHP.
That's
and,
fine.
You know, it's not MVC or anything like that. It's far from it. But it's joyous, and I'm creating a thing that, for want of a better word, works.
Yeah. So within like agile development, there's this idea of spikes.
Oh, shut up. I'm not doing agile.
The idea is you have an idea and you just make throwaway code. You don't focus on code quality or anything like that. You don't worry about peer review. It's never going to go into production. You just prove the concept and is it technically right. feasible? Is this a good idea? And at the end of it, you decide yes or no. And whatever you decide, the code gets thrown away. It's never designed to be production code. And there are other concepts that, you know, help with being fast. My dad's wife is an artist. And in the art community, there's a popular thing now, which is the find your joy. And the idea with artists is that they're getting stuck not producing paintings because they're always worried about how they're going to turn out, who they're going to show them to, and the end quality. So the idea of find your joy is just paint every day for 1 hour and don't think about it. Don't think about keeping it. Don't think about showing it to anyone, but just do it. Just get in the habit of doing it and finding your joy by doing it and freeing yourself of sort of these mental burdens.
So I've found joy. I'm keen to hear from our listeners and hear if any of you have found joy either in a similar way to I have via PHP, or if you've just banged out a shell script or banged out a game using whatever language happens to be your favorite. Send us an email, show@linuxmatters.sh.